From the Gable Media Podcast Network and presented by Lines, this is Spaces, the podcast where we make sense of the spaces that shape society. I'm your host, Demetrius Lynch. Hello! Thanks for coming back. And if you're new here, welcome. This is episode 205. What if the reason you feel tired, distracted, or uncomfortable indoors has something to do with the way your building handles light? Today's conversation is all about just that, daylighting, one of the most powerful tools for healthier, more sustainable buildings. I'm joined by Joe Minshewski, a chemical engineer, entrepreneur, daylighting advocate, and the vice president of sales and marketing at Advanced Glazings Limited. Joe's path into architecture was anything but traditional. After beginning his career in chemical engineering and later earning an MBA in marketing, he found himself running an extrusion operation for multi-walled acrylic and polycarbonate in the late 1990s. That work eventually led him into the world of glazing, and from there into a deep passion for daylighting, sustainability, and human-centered building design. Since joining AGL in 2005, Joe has become a vocal champion for better buildings, spaces that are not only more energy efficient, but also healthier, more comfortable, and more connected to the natural world. In our conversation, Joe explains why daylighting is about much more than simply bringing sunlight into a space. We discuss glare, thermal discomfort, artificial light, occupant health, and how technologies like diffused glazing can help designers balance natural light with comfort and performance. Enjoy. Hi, Demetrius here. As you may know, Spaces is part of Gable Media, the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community and beyond. You may have heard me previously mention the development of a brand new membership platform for Gable Media. Well, it's finally here. You can now sign up to be a member at gablemedia.com/members. And as your first major perk, you gain exclusive access to our continuing education program, including AIA creditworthy courses. That's right. Gable Media is now an official AIA CES provider, and you can get credit for listening to Select Spaces episodes. The days of scouring the internet for online courses and running around town for creditworthy presentations are over. I've tried out our program and it is the most convenient way to get your continuing education credits. Now, this membership tier will be limited, so make sure to go to gablemedia.com/members or just click the link in the show notes to gain access today. Joe Minshewski, thanks for joining me.
Demetrius, it's an absolute joy. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah. And one of the things as we were coordinating this call, you mentioned, I think you have a background of chemical engineering?
I'm a chemical engineer. Yeah, that's my undergrad.
Okay. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that in this conversation and sort of this buildup. But can you tell me a little bit about your background and maybe incorporate some of that?
Sure. Yeah. So it's a far more logical and uninteresting path than you would think for a chemical engineer to end up in the world of sustainable design and daylighting specifically. But, you know, very quickly, I was born on Cape Breton Island off the east coast of Nova Scotia and spent most of my adult life in southern Ontario near Toronto, Canada. But I've been fortunate enough to come home for some time now. And I live in a beautiful little river valley called the Marguerite area. And I'm hopefully not ready to run out the clock just yet, but I'm certainly enjoying a quieter life these days. It's been wonderful. So the chemical engineering thing, I graduated in 1991 and I went to work in the world of plastics, believe it or not. And, logical place for a chemical engineer. And somewhere along the line, I ended up running an extrusion operation in Niagara Falls, extruding multi-wall acrylics, multi-wall polycarbonates like Lexans and the acrylic equivalent, used primarily for greenhouses. So that was my first introduction to bringing light into spaces, and that sort of morphed into bringing light into sunrooms and you know, like sort of hobby sunrooms and hobby greenhouses and stuff like that. And then it became skylights. And then it, you know, it got further and further into architectural daylighting. And I really, really love this world. So somewhere in the late 90s, I went to Canisius College in Buffalo, did an MBA there, and moved mostly into the sales, marketing, you know, promotional side of this world. So I worked with Advanced Glazings when I moved home here back to Nova Scotia a few years back. And then I went off on my own for a little while and did some very different things. Went back to my chemistry background for a while and did some tech things and had some good fortune and then retired. And that lasted like 4 months, I think, and then came back to work for Advanced Glazings, and I've been here 4 years. It's been marvelous. I'd forgotten how much I love this world, and I'm so glad to be back into it. So I'm still a part timer, an hourly employee. I host the podcast, and I'll come back to that in a moment if you'd like. But I host the Better Buildings for Humans podcast for Advanced Glazings, and I do some promotional work, and I tend to be the liaison to, you know, the technical community that's looking at daylighting and sustainability in a more systematic way.
Tell me a little bit about Advanced Glazings. What do you guys do? Do you have a particular specialty project type that you focus on?
So the product line is called Solera. So there's Solera, Solera Wall, and something called Solera Glare Repair. And what it is it's a window you can't see through, right? So it's a window, it's a window that diffuses light. So, you know, everybody wants to bring natural light into a space. We are learning, as you know, that humans have isolated ourselves from the natural world to too great an extent. Right. A lot of good things came from us being in buildings all the time. Right. We can be more productive. We can be very safe. The little critters can't get us anymore. And, you know, those terrible rainstorms aren't quite so terrible when you're in the right place. But at the same time, we've isolated ourselves from fresh air. We've isolated ourselves from, you know, the beautiful mountains and the fields. We've isolated ourselves from natural light, from full spectrum natural sunshine. And with each passing day, there's more and more and more literature coming out that shows that there are some pretty profound health impacts associated with not having enough access to full spectrum natural light. Okay. So that's sort of the backdrop. That's the basis of the importance of daylighting. Now, actually executing, bringing natural light into spaces, inside of buildings is really hard. It's really, really complicated. And so we're trying to simplify that process. Okay. You know, if you look at the work that Dr. Alston Jakubiak did at the University of Toronto, he looked at these various indices that we use to determine whether or not we're going to face glare, you know, and glare is the biggest issue, thermal discomfort as well. And we'll come back to thermal discomfort, but glare is probably the biggest issue. So we put windows on the side of the building and the sun shines through, and that's how we think we're daylighting. But what happens is we create these glare patterns that are, you know, something we cannot live with. And we put blinds on the windows and we close the blinds and we no longer have those beautiful views and we no longer have natural light. We've left it outside because of the glare problem. So if you look at Dr. Jakubiak's work, he said there's all these different probability indexes, glare probability indices that determine whether or not we're going to suffer from glare as a result of the placement of the window, the size, the orientation, all that sort of thing. And he says, really, there was only two of them that mattered. Right. One is something called daylight glare probability, and it matters when you're at the perimeter of the building, when you're standing at the window. Right. And what that's all about is just absolute brightness. We can't stare directly at the sun. We're just not made for that.
Yeah.
Right. That's the easy one. That's the easy one. Where it gets complicated is the other one that you said was most important is called contrast ratio. So as you start to get farther into the floor plate, the ambient light level in the space starts to get lower, but then you have these incredible shafts of extremely bright light. And the contrast ratio is you know, the ratio of illumination between the really bright spot and usually ambient or a darker spot, right? A shadowed area. And that creates incredible discomfort for us. And the reason for that is really easy to understand when you pause and think about it. When it's really bright, our pupils constrict, they close to let less light in and to protect their eyeball, right? And when it's dark, they dilate, they open to let more light in so that we can be safer. We can see the lions chasing us in the dark.
Yeah.
But what we can't do is have them constricted and dilated simultaneously. Okay. So when you're in a scenario where you've got a really bright surface immediately adjacent to a less bright surface, you know, within our line of sight, and that difference in illumination level is greater than 10 to 1 ratio. So, you know, say 2000 lux versus, you know, 200 lux, we experience severe discomfort because of those big swings. So people have known this for a long time. People have understood this for a long, long time. And this whole sort of art and science has emerged to avoid direct sunlight. Those bright spots come from direct sunlight, unabated, unmitigated, uncontrolled sunlight coming in through your transparent window, right? So you've got those bright spots immediately adjacent to dark spots. You've got all of that discomfort. And the way we deal with it, unfortunately, is to put up the blinds. Right. And, you know, USGBC did studies. They discovered that, you know, 2/3 of glazed area in America is permanently covered with blinds. They did the same thing in Canada. They got almost identical numbers. I think the USGBC number was 60 and the Canadian number was 65 or something like that. Right. 65%. So if you take any 10,000 square foot piece of curtain wall, right, with transparent glass, you know, about 60% of it is going to be covered. 6,000 square feet is going to be covered in blinds, right? So this whole, you know, sort of art and science emerged to avoid the direct sunlight, right? So have the light bounce off something before it comes in, or you know, avoid direct sunlight so you only put glass on the north, all those sorts of things. Incredibly complicated. And you need a lot of expertise to do it. But more importantly, it starts to drive design, right? Form starts to be driven by the avoidance of direct sunlight, as opposed to the, you know, sort of the pure nature of the form that you're seeking. Right. So it's a problem. It's a real problem. So what Solera does, really simple. You can still have transparent glass. As a matter of fact, it works really well in conjunction with transparent glass. But the Solera takes the sunlight, and when it hits it, it spreads evenly in every direction. So it becomes like a lampshade, right? A portion of your glazed area turns into a lampshade that brings natural light in, elevates the ambient light level in the space. And since the ambient light level is higher, then the contrast ratio goes down, right? And you don't need artificial light to make this happen. It happens as a result of the natural light that's being diffused, bouncing off the ceilings, bouncing off the walls, pushing deeper into the interior spaces. And now you've got controlled natural light. And it's also got a really high level of insulation, which matters a whole lot these days. So when you're bumping into window to wall ratio, you can get more glazed area by having, say, an R9 or even an R18, R12 glazing material in there that distributes light beautifully with far less sacrifice in terms of the building envelope's thermal performance. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I hope that was comprehensive, though.
Yeah, no, that was super helpful, and I think there's a couple things that she did not mention that's worth mentioning is the heat gain that we get from glass that we have to be mindful of, as well as if you're covering everything up with blinds, then you're turning all the lights on to avoid that glare, and you're turning on the lights and using tons of electricity, which, as everyone's seeing in their electric bills now, are all spiking. We have to find a way to control our electrical usage until we can support it with more sustainable power So this, that's absolutely another reason that you would want to have that kind of diffused glazing.
Yeah, well, and I'll even take it one step further beyond the energy consumption, right? Because I mean, the sun is free. So if you can bring it in effectively, it's free and it's the most renewable resource that exists, right? It's the ultimate renewable resources. But what we're finding or what's being discovered now is that the artificial lights that we're using now, the LED lights, while being, you know, an incredible breakthrough in terms of longevity and energy consumption, they're not full spectrum. All right. Mm. They're not full spectrum the way the sun is full spectrum. And that has some really, really serious health and productivity implications for us. So, you know, everybody knows about circadian rhythms. We all know that somewhere around 480 nanometers, which is a blue color part of the spectrum, that's what triggers us to, ties us to the 24-hour clock, right? Left alone, if we were completely isolated from the sun, our 24-hour clock would drift, right? Which means that we wouldn't wake up at the same time, we wouldn't go to bed at the same time. And that is not a small thing. And here's why it's not a small thing. There are lots of things that happen inside of our bodies that are scheduled. And we're just learning about this stuff too, like sleep for sure. Sleep's the obvious one. But there's things that happen when we're asleep, and there's things that happen when we're awake too, that should happen at that particular time. And when we start messing with the timing of these natural processes, right, we can make ourselves very, very sick. So if we're in an environment where we don't have access to the sun and our only light source is a partial spectrum LED, we're going to run into issues. Now, and that's the blue that entrains us to the 24-hour circadian clock. But also, LEDs tend to have very little of the long wavelength reds and the near infrareds, the close heat portion of the spectrum. It's not visible, but that sort of heat that you feel when you stand next to a campfire, right? When we take that away, those particular wavelengths are critical in some very important internal processes. They're just really starting to fully understand that. But I mean, you know, diabetes has already been linked to a lack of long wave reds. And every time I open a book, every time I read a blog, every time I listen to a podcast, or I have somebody on my show on the Better Buildings for Humans podcast, I go, oh my God, they've discovered something else that's tied to these natural rhythms. 20 years ago when I started this, Demetrius, I thought that stuff was like right up there with healing crystals, you know, like kind of just, and no offense to the healing crystal people, but you know, it's fun, but there's no real science. And that's where we were with daylighting 20, 25 years ago. But now, more and more research, Dr. Russell Foster from Oxford, Dr. Glenn Jeffrey from the London School, Dr. Martin Moore Eady, the more research is done, the more that we are discovering that we really desperately need to have full spectrum natural light in relatively significant quantities for some portion of our day. Right. Otherwise, we're going to get less and less healthy. Again, a lot, but it's important. It's so important.
Yeah. You had mentioned some of the discomfort that we can experience from glare in particular. Are there any sort of short-term negative effects that people experience that you can think of when you have a poor daylighting situation that you're contending with?
Oh, absolutely. Short term is you know, the discomfort makes it difficult for us to function at our full capabilities. If you're, you know, squinting or turning away or pulling your hoodie up over your head to block the glare, you know, putting a box next to your laptop so that you know, you can read your laptop. All of those things, they're distractions and they are time consumers when we're trying to be useful humans. There's pain too. Like it actually hurts to stare at something that's extremely bright while your pupils are trying to dilate to see into the darker corners. And you mentioned the thermal discomfort. I mean, they're completely connected, right? Everybody pretty much has sat at the airport, right? And had half their face on fire. we've all felt that. We've all felt that. That's the thermal discomfort. And you have to take action. You can't continue working on whatever it is you're working on, which could be very important when you're feeling that level of discomfort. So the diffusion, it takes away, you know, it eliminates those hot spots, the bright spots, right? It takes away the glare discomfort, but it also spreads out the IR, the infrared portion of the spectrum. It spreads out the heat that's coming at you. So it just feels cooler to be standing in front of diffused light relative to direct sunlight.
Now, one of the things that I tend to contend with in a residential setting is I'm always fighting with the structural engineer to try to get more window. We have to have shear walls to hold the building up. So they need a certain amount of width. Does its ability to distribute the light more evenly help increase the perceived light, if that makes sense?
Yes, and it's not perceived, it's actual light. So when you have light coming through transparent glass, which you need for views, okay, you need to have some amount of transparent glass to provide views, which are equally important to our psyche. But we've got limitations, right? You have to have a certain amount of wall, as you just described, both for structural reasons and also for code reasons, right? For energy management. But with a good diffuser like Solera, the sun strikes it and it spreads out evenly and it covers more area, right? So instead of having all the light fall into one spot, right, and you got that super bright spot, that light is going everywhere. So you have more light with a relatively small amount of glazed area. I think of an example. We've got a hockey rink, one of our early projects from 20 something years ago. So there's a hockey rink, Canadian. There's a hockey rink just up the road from here called Port Hawkesbury Arena. It's a large hockey rink. I think it seats like 5,000 or something. And there's a 6-foot strip of clerestory. And during the day, they don't have to turn the lights on. It runs down the entire length of the rink. But like during the day, you don't have to turn the lights on at all because it's spreading the light instead of having it all fall in just a few spots. So I could send you a picture. I could show you a picture. It illuminates the entire space with a relatively small part, a small amount of glazed area. And I think, to me, that's one of the most important aspects of it, is that we can reduce glazed area by using something that diffuses light effectively. And you really have to separate the two, Demetrius. You've got to look at transparent glass as your tool for providing view. And you have to look at, you know, a good light diffuser as being your tool for providing, you know, an illumination source for a light source, right? Mm. So if you think about it that way, yeah, you can bring a whole lot of light into a home with a relatively, you know, like just a little section of the transom. That alone would be enough to illuminate a significant portion of the interior. We never used to do a lot of work in homes. It's a relatively new thing for us. And what we're hearing is that people want private areas. You know, there's this front of house, back of house concept. People want private areas, but historically those private areas have been relatively dark because, you know, you're isolating yourself from your neighbors. But with a translucent, you can have a private area without anybody seeing inside and still have it very brightly daylighted. So that part of our business is starting to really pick up consequentially.
And it's interesting because that's exactly where my head went, was this sort of clerestory arrangement. And that would push me to want to do more kind of 9-foot ceilings and to get that band of translucent glazing above to really light an area.
That's exactly how to do it. That is the best. And when you do that, what you just described, you're also bouncing a lot of the light off the ceiling.
Yeah.
Which means it's going to push deeper. It's going to push deeper inside. Ceiling tends to be brightly colored in most scenarios, right? Or lighter colored, I should say. Right. So more of the light stays in the visible light spectrum and continues on its journey into the building.
Yeah. So what is, in your experience, what has been sort of the most complex part of the design or installation of this type of product?
there hasn't been a lot of complexities. You know, some of the products, in order to have really high insulation levels, are thick, right? They'll be like 3 inches thick IGUs or 4 inch thick IGUs, which is an R25 product. So you sometimes have to work with the glazing contractors to make sure they understand how you make it fit. Like we've got really simple ways of making it work with anybody's glazing bars. So it's really not an issue, but for the glazing contractor who's used to getting 1 inch IGUs delivered to site, it can be a little bit of a shocker. So we have to take great care to make sure that they understand, you know, that is really not all that different. And there's a 1 inch overhang that drops into the 1 inch pocket, and it's fine. So that's probably the biggest issue. Solera wall takes a lot of explaining sometimes. Solera wall is a relatively new product, about 4 years old, 5 years old. And what it does is it clicks, picture glass panels that click together analogously to insulated metal panels. All right. So the magic of that is that you can eliminate the framing, right? You can just have the panels click together, click, 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 click. And it, you know, it looks like all the glass is on a single plane. It's all on one plane. You don't have the surface that comes with a curtain wall system. So having all of that ability to eliminate the framing, I mean, the framing, aluminum is a very good conductor of heat. You know, it's a terrible insulator. It's a very good conductor. So much of the energy that we lose in our glazing systems goes through the framing. And we wanted to be able to take the framing out of the picture so that we could get an overall system R value or that was much higher, or, you know, for people who speak U value, so that the U value was much, much lower. But, you know, when you explain to a glazing contractor that they don't need, you know, they don't need any sort of framing, that one takes a little bit more of a conversation. Once they get it, they love it because it installs so fast. Same, you know, just like IMP installs very, very quickly, the Solera wall installs very quickly, and they absolutely love it. And we just say, hey, tell us how big the hole is, and we'll send you all the components that you need to do the install. It's really good once we calm them down and explain what it is that they're going to be working with.
Yeah. Is there any limitations for size of panel?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And mostly by, you know, the machinery that we use to manufacture the panels. So it's like 5 by 12 for our Solera, and it's 5 by 8 for Solera wall is the maximum panel size. And I'd probably double check on the size for Solera, but I'm pretty sure I'm almost certain it's 5 by 8 for Solera wall. I work in that side of the business a lot more.
Got it. Any other special considerations that either for a Solera or just in general for daylighting that a designer would need to be aware of?
Yeah, I could throw a few hints out. Sure. Like when you're trying to decide whether or not you need a skylight, for example. So I'm talking about bigger buildings. It's not so much of an issue in a home, but when you get into sort of, you know, commercial industrial kind of things, the farthest you're going to be able to daylight with any kind of glazing is about double the ceiling height as far as like getting into the floor plate, right? So you got a 10-foot ceiling, you're going to be able to daylight 20 feet in. Is kind of the rule of thumb. If you've got a big, you know, like the big box stores, you see all the skylights on the roof, it's because they can't daylight the interior with clear story. They need the skylights to get deeper into the center. That's one cool little tidbit. Another one is the color of the wall and the ceiling that's adjacent to the glazed area. We're doing a project with a major NCAA university in the Northeast, and they wanted the walls to be black. They wanted all the walls and ceilings to be black because it looked really, really cool. And when we ran the radiance models, which is how we model daylighting, it's probably the best, most accurate daylight modeling tool. When we ran the radiance models, we didn't have any trouble with, you know, the illumination spots on the floor. What we had trouble with was if, you know, the player looked up at the glazed area and everything surrounding it was black, that contrast ratio applies there too, right? So we had incredibly high contrast ratios with the first design. And you can imagine what we went through trying to convince the architects that you can't paint that black. Like, it's just, you're wasting, like, don't daylight if you're going to paint everything black, because you're going to create a really sort of uncomfortable and maybe even dangerous situation for the players. So yeah, if daylighting is an objective, bright, more reflective surfaces is absolutely the way to go, or you're going to get yourself in trouble, and B, you might also just kind of waste that light by having it all absorbed and turned into heat once it strikes these darker surfaces. Those would be the biggest two that I would bring out. Can I do one more? Let me throw one more in there.
Yeah.
Now, transparent glass for view and translucent glass for daylighting work together beautifully. You can actually preserve views by using a portion of your glazing as being translucent. And how that works is essentially, if you reduce that contrast ratio, right, if you use the translucent to illuminate the space more brightly with natural light, then the contrast ratio is going to be reduced even for the transparent glass that continues to exist, right? So there'll be less, the occupants will be less compelled to put on the blinds, to pull the blinds closed. And that way we're preserving their views and bringing in natural light. And even on a Western face, like a Western elevation, on the Western elevation, the light is almost horizontal near the end of the day. You can put the blind just on the vision portion, right? Just on the vision glass, the transparent glass, and then leave the translucent open. And you still got this beautiful illumination source that you're getting plenty of sunlight and a beautifully lit space. And you're still protected from that very direct sunlight at 5 p.m. or 4 p.m. as the sun is dropping below, behind the ocean for you guys.
Yeah,
behind the mountain for me, but behind the ocean for you guys.
That's great. I do want to emphasize that contrast ratio point, because I've also noticed a little bit of a trend of people that are really liking this black paint,
right,
on their interiors with like a wood accent. And I'm seeing it a lot more and more. And that's great to bring up as a cautionary note that you are creating quite significant pain for yourself down the line
potentially
when it comes to daylighting. Yeah.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, you just have to recognize, I mean, some of those black surfaces, black rooms, they can be sexy as, you know, they're just, they can be just gorgeous, right? But if you're intending the daylight, that's not the way to go. It's not the answer.
Yeah.
Right.
Two more for you. I mentioned rising energy costs.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other changes, society, technology, economy that you see affecting daylighting and things that we should be aware of and kind of keep our eye out?
So if I think back 20, 25 years ago when I first got into this world, we had to convince people that natural light was a good thing, that it was really, really important to bring natural light into space for real. You know, it's like, we got lots of lighting, we're good. We don't need to do this daylighting thing. It's you know, and energy was cheaper back then, significantly cheaper. So the big changes that we've seen are things that we've already talked about mostly. I mean, the cost of energy, the awareness of what, you know, CO2 emissions are doing to our planet. You know, I don't want to get into that, you know, waving the flag on that one, but like, it's just happening. It's just happening.
Yeah.
I live in Eastern Nova Scotia. We are experiencing a drought in New Scotland, right? I mean, this is the reason the Scottish people came here is it reminded them of home. There was lots of drizzle. It drizzled.
Yeah.
It rains here a whole lot. And we're 2 months into a drought now. So things are changing. There's no two ways about it. So our consumption of energy, our management of energy, we have to wake up to that. It's sorry, but we just do. And so that's been a boon for sure for those of us in the daylighting world. And then the other side of it is the health awareness is really growing. I mean, you saw the new LEED 5, you know, there's like 30 points. You can get 30 points for daylighting now.
Wow.
30. So everybody's getting it. Everybody's understanding now how profoundly these things impact us, that isolating ourselves too much is incredibly dangerous for us. Look at it from air too. You know, interesting little trade-off, right? You the more air you bring into a space, the more energy you have to consume to heat it or to cool it, in your case, to cool it. So there's energy consumption. But if you have stale air, well, you got yourself an issue. You've got a very serious issue there, right? So there's a lot of these kinds of things. The more we can utilize the natural world, and I'm not talking that we have to move back to, you know, thatch huts or anything like that, but we do have to use technology, design methodologies, whatever it takes in order to reconnect ourselves to the natural world and to our communities, right? I love windows because, you know, we do a lot of work in schools, and when the kids, they used to say, you know, you don't want the windows because the kids will look outside and they'll be distracted. It's the exact opposite.
When they've
studied it, it's the exact opposite. When the kids can look outside and they see their community and they see the trees and they see the playgrounds, right, they do better in school. They perform better. So it's all about connections and balancing the connections properly. And that's how we create buildings that are better for the occupants.
Yeah. Here in California, going off your point about the changing, we're experiencing an increase of humidity, which we've never had to deal with. And compared to the South, I'm sure people are like, oh, that's nothing. But for us, it's quite uncomfortable. But, and also it this conversation about the health aspects of it, it reminds me, I'm doing a mini series that I do annually, or try to do it annually. And this is focusing on sort of the evolution of housing. And I was just writing my script for like the late 1900s, I believe, somewhere around there, when the, I don't know if you recall history, the tenement housing, how after the boom of the Industrial Revolution, everybody came in and packed into these, particularly in New York, into these apartments that they basically intended for single families, but they added in floors and added in rooms to make new units, going deeper and deeper into these row towns. And you ended up with spaces with zero light, zero ventilation, and the awful conditions that existed. And now we're, you know, we've understood how horrible that was.
Yeah, and we still have some marginalized neighborhoods, you know, all across North America, all across Europe, where people are still living in those conditions. That's the whole environmental justice side of it, that's a component of it. And we could do a whole episode on that, I'm sure, or maybe a bunch of episodes. but that it's the isolation. We can't live permanently and work permanently in these dark boxes. We're just not built for it. We're not designed for it. We need to be out in the natural world. The human body cannot adapt in 100 years to you know, however many years of living in the outside world. We can't just flip a switch and be like, oh, I don't need the sun or the wind or the plants anymore. It doesn't work. It's not going to work.
Yeah. So on that note of podcasting, I want to hear a little bit about Better Buildings for Humans before we get out of here. Tell me a little bit about what you're trying to do with the podcast, what type of guests you chat with.
I want to have conversations that look at the trade-offs. I'm very keen on the concern that the intense single-minded focus on energy and energy engineering is detrimental in some cases to our health. I mean, the most energy efficient building that you can build, so put my engineering hat on for just a minute, is a black box, right? It's Walmart without the skylights. That's the most energy efficient building that you can build and use LED lights. That is energy perfect. So when our 35, our 40 wall system, you know, our 40 roof system and LED lights, bam, engineers are just in engineering heaven, because that's perfection, except for the fact that humans are in there. and it'll be miserable and unhealthy and unproductive, and we'll have really shitty communities. Excuse my language. We'll have really crappy communities if we can't connect to each other. So I want to have these conversations. I want to talk to architects. I want to talk to building scientists. I talk to a lot of building scientists. We geek out pretty hard on some of this stuff. And I want to talk to, you know, some product manufacturers that are, you know, trying to make, you know, real changes in this world. We talk a lot about, you know, indoor air quality and those kinds of things. So it's a little, maybe a little on the geekier side, but you know, you can't do your job. The art never comes to life if we don't throw in the engineering component of it as well. So I try to walk a nice line between all of those things and expose, you know, the reality of the trade-offs that are out there when we're trying to make better buildings.
Joe, thank you so much for joining me. For those that want to follow along, what's the best way for them to do that?
Oh, just check out the Better Buildings for Humans podcast. It's available on it's available on Apple. It's available on Spotify. And we've recently started putting all the videos up on YouTube. So it's at the Advanced Glazings Limited YouTube channel as well. If you need to look at me, you know, I don't know. But if there's the need is there to look at the guests, go check out the YouTube channel as well.
Thank you so much, Joe. Thank you to the listeners for listening. We will talk again on the next one. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Spaces is brought to you by Lines, my Southern California-based architecture and creative studio that provides services focused on custom homes, home renovations, creative office, and specialty retail spaces. Find out more at lines.studio. That's lines.studio. If you learned something from this episode or think it would resonate with a friend, please share it and rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It really helps others find the show. If you have a question about the built environment or just want to share whatever is on your mind, I'd love to hear from you. You can do that at lines.studio/podcasts. Looking for similar content? Spaces is a proud member of Gable Media, a digital media platform where you can find even more content like this. Visit gablemedia.com, and that's gablemedia.com. And lastly, before I go, if you want to see additional photos, videos, clips, and other content from this episode, visit lines.studio/podcasts. Talk soon.